Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins. This Politics Monday, we consider the vast power voter turnout will have in Mecklenburg County, the results of which could very well decide who becomes the next president of the United States. We'll be joined by WFAE's Steve Harrison, political scientist Daniel Hopkins, Drew Cromer, chair of the Mecklenburg Democratic Party, and Jeff Blum, a Democratic Party organizer and fundraiser. First, we turn to a conversation I had last week with Karen Brinson Bell, executive director of North Carolina's State Board of Elections. We discussed election security and what the state is doing to make sure that people in western North Carolina can vote, despite the devastation that Hurricane Helene has brought. What have been the biggest changes in western North Carolina, and what is the status of especially early voting sites in that part of the state?
The status is things are really good. Where we started out on that Monday following Helene, you know, we couldn't even open up 14 of our county offices. No power. We knew the buildings hadn't been damaged, but they didn't have internet. They didn't have phone service, things of that nature necessarily to serve the voters. It was remarkable. In 1 week time, all those offices were back open and able to serve the public. We had mail service resuming in all of the county offices and so forth. And so they have just worked diligently to, through their own hardship. Many of them had their homes affected or still don't have power or water, and yet they are showing up every day to get the job done. And what it means is that in all 100 counties, we will have early voting available October 17th through November the 2nd. Now, in the Helene-affected counties, we had 80 sites planned for early voting in those 25 affected counties. We're going to wind up with 76 opened. Five sites could not be effectively opened. And so Buncombe will have 10 of their 14 sites open. McDowell will have one of their two planned sites open. And then Avery County was actually able to add a site to be of more service to the voters there. So you know, 76 out of 80 is pretty remarkable. And as we were preparing for Election Day and what their needs are, I don't have a solid count yet. We're still working through that. But the vast majority of Election Day voting sites are going to be open. Now, that might be by generator, and a lot of these places may have porta potties. It's just such a testament to all the preparations that election officials put into being ready for an election, so that when things, unexpected things happen, maybe not to this degree usually, but we know how to pivot and keep the wheels turning on what needs to be done and then take on those additional responsibilities.
I understand about 25,000 people across the state give up their time on presidential elections to run the system. Have you had challenges with staffing around in the affected counties, the places where Helene hit hardest?
It was a big concern for us initially, because we didn't know how many of those folks would be displaced. But as we have worked with the counties and addressed what their needs are, they have let us know that folks are staying, they are committed, and this is a way that they see they can give back to their community. And so they are going to be the same smiling faces to greet you at your Election Day polling sites, and many of the same folks at your early voting sites. And it's not completely volunteer. There is a small amount of pay, but that's also a good thing. That means that these counties are able to pay folks at a time when their jobs may be suspended or have washed away. There's a good sense of community when you know that you're able to contribute in that way and help your neighbors as they help their neighbors be able to cast their ballot.
That's right. And with the small amount of pay, I think it's fair to say that folks are not doing this for the money. They're doing it because they believe it's important. One thing that has happened in a lot of other states and to some degree in this state is lawsuits about the rules around voting, about hours, locations, IDs. given the changes that the state board has allowed counties to make in order to be able to carry out the elections in Western North Carolina, given the limitations there around polling places that have to be relocated, et cetera, do you have any concerns about certification of the race that, you know, there will be post-election litigation around that? How are you thinking about that issue?
The flexibility that was given to initially 13 counties by the state board is under their emergency authority in a natural disaster situation. And that resolution, you know, allowed for flexibility in the location of the sites, flexibility in the hours and sites for early voting, and then also being able to move precinct officials around and even have officials come in from other counties if that's something that they had needed. That was completely within the authority of the state board. It was a unanimous resolution, unanimous vote on that resolution by the bipartisan board members. And then ultimately what we saw is that much of that has been put into law as part of the Relief Act that the legislature passed unanimously in both chambers. So again, a bipartisan commitment and, you know, was signed into law by the governor. And so I think it's just a real testament that we stayed within the guardrails is what I would say, but gave flexibility so that the methods of voting that we have in North Carolina, absentee by mail, in-person early voting, and election day in-person voting, can be carried out with recognition that we may need to take voting to the people in these affected counties. But we didn't want to do anything that would be confusing to voters elsewhere in non-affected counties. And so, you know, the absentee return deadline is still the same for all North Carolinians, 7:30 p.m. on election day, if that's how you choose to vote. It must be received by the County Board of Elections in order to be counted. We gave flexibility that ballot, if a voter in one of those affected counties, they can drop it off to another County Board of Elections, but it still has to be turned in by 7:30 p.m. election day. We'll still follow the same certification process, which is in North Carolina, we upload absentee by mail results at 7:30 p.m. with the polls closed. Through the night, we'll upload the early voting in-person results and the election day results. And knock on wood, if all goes smoothly, we will have all unofficial results published by the midnight hour-ish. And then what we'll see is we have in law a 10-day certification period. This has been a standing process in North Carolina where we go through reconciliation practices. We do a post-election audit of the voting equipment. That's been in place since 2006, and it'll be in place for this election again. We'll deal with provisional ballots where we do have to research those to see if they can be counted or not. We'll work with those absentee ballots that might have been delivered to another county and returned to one of the affected counties timely. And then our law also allows that military and overseas voters can turn in their ballots not within 9 days of the election. And then we meet on the 10th day in the counties, so November the 15th, to certify and make the results official. And a similar process happens with the state board on November 26th. We don't change that just because we've had a natural disaster occur. We didn't change it for the pandemic. And so we will still go through our same certification process and put it before the boards for what we anticipate will be bipartisan support to certify.
And I think it's important to remind people that, you know, 2020 was the pandemic and, 2018 dealt with hurricanes. Yeah, this idea of a non-disrupted election might be more fantasy than reality. You are certainly used to dealing with the curveballs.
You know, that is our job, though. As election administrators, this is a profession for us. And so it's not about, you know, a typewriter and a filing system anymore. It's a lot about, you know, when you have 7.7 million registered voters, you have a lot of technology and databases and data entry that's happening. But then you also have logistics of setting up 2,500 or so voting sites and coordinating and training 25,000 workers. And so you do all of that prep work in advance. We truly did start working on this presidential election the day we certified the last presidential election. And then, you know, we do that kind of preparation with all of them. And doing that, having dotted the I and crossed the T in advance, means that when something, you know, a curveball comes our way, we're ready to knock it out of the park, knock on wood.
And turning to the general atmosphere, one thing you've mentioned is the online bullying type, harassing posts, social media. I think people have really politicized the election process and maybe feel, especially online, I don't know, entitled by that veil of anonymity to spew nasty things at election workers and people who you work with. How are you dealing with that? And how are you making sure that the people who work on our elections are safe and feel safe?
Mm-hmm. It's tough, you know, but at the end of the day, even that person that says, you know, hateful things about us or questions our own integrity, we are working to ensure that they can cast their ballot and know that it's counted too. And so through all of the bullying and vitriol and rhetoric that comes out in social media, sometimes in emails, and sometimes even in phone calls, we try to take that and recognize as one as an opportunity to tell our story. We need people to understand what the processes are and how we do conduct secure and accurate elections. But, you know, we have to be conscious of what has happened to some of our colleagues across the country, death threats and threats to their family. And when we're a swing state, a battleground state like North Carolina is this time around, and we have been before, we may be the subject of that, the target of that. And so we have worked with our federal and state partners to do physical assessments of our facilities, particularly the county board offices. And they have, you know, addressed their individual situations. Some of them have needed panic buttons. Some of them have needed better doors. Some of them have reconfigured their lobbies, different things of that nature. We've done some of the same here at the state board. You know, we work with our federal partners, and these are crimes. If you truly threaten an election official, and there are people in this country who have gone to jail because of threatening an election official, what I would encourage is people to put those phones down, go sign up to be a poll worker, and see how the process actually works, and be supportive and recognize that the people, if you're not willing to do that, say thank you to the people who are working, because they are, you know, the same people in your grocery store. They might sit by you at church. They might be your former basketball coach or English teacher. And they deserve a thank you more than the hatred that's being spewed.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think of outsiders and outside groups, you know, mysterious shadowy forces coming in and manipulating elections. But like you pointed out, you know, the poll workers who I see every time I go vote, they're the same people I see in the Harris Teeter. And
that's right.
Yeah. I think people can lose sight of that pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, do you really want to tell the lady that taught you how to put a comma in a sentence properly? do you really want to be, you know, harsh to her? I mean, that county elections director typically lives in that county and shops at those grocery stores. Our job is truly to ensure that every eligible voter is able to cast their ballot. We don't do it in a partisan manner. We don't do it with favor to any candidate. Matter of fact, you know, most of the time we don't even know what we put the results in, but we don't actually know who won or lost until we get home ourselves and take a look. We've just made sure that the votes are accurate when they're published. Yeah, it's in our best interest, if possible, that, you know, people turn out and that there's wide margins, so we have less chance of a recount affecting our Thanksgiving and our Christmas holidays. But we'll work through that too.
Well, Karen Brinson Bell, Executive Director at the North Carolina State Board of Elections, joining us from Raleigh. Thank you, and good luck with the voting.
Appreciate it. Yes, everyone, go out and vote. That's the important thing.
I'm Eli Portillo. This is Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins. 80%, That's about the share of registered voters who cast a ballot in the 2020 presidential election in Wake County. 72%. That's the share in Mecklenburg County. And this disparity between the state's largest urban areas isn't a one-off. It's a persistent issue for North Carolina Democrats and a hindrance to their goal of flipping the state blue more consistently. Joining me to talk about this is Drew Cromer, chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, Jeff Blum, a New York-based activist with ties to the Boston area and Democrats who has helped adopt, as he puts it, Mecklenburg County's Democrats, Daniel Hopkins, a political scientist at the University of Pennsylvania, and WFAE's political reporter Steve Harrison. Drew, I'm going to start with you. This is an issue for Democrats in Mecklenburg County, in statewide races in North Carolina, and given North Carolina's status as one of the few swing states, for Democrats nationwide now. What is going on in Mecklenburg County, and why do we see this turnout gap?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Mecklenburg County has had a low turnout for the last couple of elections in a row. In 2022, our turnout was lagging 13% behind Wake County, home to Raleigh. And, you know, that equals 40, 50,000 votes every single election. Mecklenburg County, we win a lot of our local elections. The Democrats win a lot of our local elections at the primary level. So there's not as much incentive for campaigns to run a general election campaign. And as a result, there's fewer people coming and knocking on your door, telling you that this election's important. And Democrats here locally think their vote doesn't matter as much. But quite the contrary. When it comes to statewide races, the votes in Mecklenburg County can literally decide the entire statewide race. So Mecklenburg needs to show up this year, and that's what we've been working on at the Democratic Party.
And Jeff, I know that you connected with the Mecklenburg Democrats and with Drew specifically, and decided to really focus your efforts, the funds you can raise and the volunteers and donors you can connect nationally on Mecklenburg County specifically. Tell me how that came about and why that was something you thought was a good focus.
Thank you, Eli. Our group's called All In for North Carolina. We're volunteers from all over, but especially from the Northeast. North Carolina is clearly an important state. This year, a very important state. And as Drew says, Mecklenburg could be the place that decides the state. And so we felt if we could find a willing partners in Mecklenburg that we could help, not replace their work, but help, we would be thrilled to do so. And Drew and his team have been fabulous, impressive partners. Since July of 2023, we've been calling Democrats in Mecklenburg County and asking them to basically consider volunteering for the Mecklenburg Democratic Party. We've had over 12,000 conversations, and we've recruited over 1,800 people who said they would come and volunteer. And then it's up to Drew's people to follow that up. But I also want to note that, of course, you know, it's a huge area, and there's a lot of activity that isn't the party. And so we also actively supported nonprofit groups like the A. Philip Randolph Institute and Action for the Climate Emergency and Siembra NC. And they've registered over 60,000 new voters, mostly people of color, in Mecklenburg County. So we don't think there's any one solution to democracy. Many hands may not make light work in this case, but they may make possible work. And Drew's team is providing leadership, and other groups are providing leadership. And we have now sent 150 people from all over the country. 24 states have come to go door-to-door canvassing with the Mecklenburg Democratic Party this fall.
And Drew, tell me a little bit more about how the party in Mecklenburg County looks different now versus when you became the chair, you know, in terms of money raised, volunteers, groups. What does this actually look like on the ground and in the party offices?
Yeah, so when I became party chair in April of 2023, we had zero party staff. The last time we had full-time paid staff working for the party was over a decade ago in 2013. Currently, we have 25 full-time staff on our payroll at MECDEM's headquarters. We have three offices across the county. We've gone from raising $40,000 to $50,000 a year to, over the last 18 months, we've raised in excess of $2.6 million. We've been able to build a juggernaut here in Mecklenburg with the singular goal of turning out the vote in this election and helping flip the two state House seats and the states and retain the state Senate seat here in Mecklenburg that are competitive this cycle. So we've recruited over 5,000 volunteers. We've raised money. We've hired staff. We have built out an operation to turn out the vote this year. But all that to be said, we still have a lot of work to do. So if there are folks that, you know, would like to see Democrats be successful this year, we encourage them to go to our website and sign up to get involved. Democracy doesn't save itself. People have to get involved and help us make it happen.
So, Steve, we've got a few days of early voting returns. Obviously, we don't know who people voted for, but we know who has cast a ballot and how many folks have cast a ballot and from where. What are we starting to see? What do the early voting numbers look like so far?
Yeah, I think the big takeaway from four, I've looked now at 4 days of early voting. They just posted Sunday's results. And the Republican Party has made a big effort under President Trump to get Republicans to vote early. You know, for a long time, I mean, Republicans have been very loyal to Election Day, but the party has been pushing its people to vote early. They call it bank your vote. And we're starting to see some of that in North Carolina. The two parties, the share of voters is basically the same. I looked this morning, 15% of registered Democrats have now voted. 14.8% of registered Republicans have already voted. If you look back at past elections, Democrats would be much farther ahead. Now, is that really going to change the election, the outcome, or are we just shifting different, you know, the same voters in different places? I don't know. That's hard to say. If you look at Mecklenburg County, I think about 13.3% of state voters overall have voted. It's a little lower in Mecklenburg County. You know, that may change over the next 10 days or so of early voting. But right now, I think about 12.2% of Mecklenburg voters have cast ballots. So again, Mecklenburg trailing just a little bit. But again, it's very, very early, only 4 days of in-person early voting.
That's right. It's very early, and the election itself is still a little over 2 days or 2 weeks away. Feels like we've been in this campaign for, you know, two decades at this point, but the finish line is actually coming up. Dan, I know that you have looked nationwide at voter trends, at voter turnout, and, you know, you've talked about how the traditional view is that getting more low-frequency voters to turn out helps Democrats. But that might not be the case nationwide right now. Tell us a little about that and what you've seen nationwide.
Absolutely. And again, thanks for having me on. I think one thing when we're talking about turnout to keep in mind is the fact that if I turn out a voter, I add one to my side's column. But if I persuade a voter, I not only add one to my side's column, I also take one away from the other side's column. So parties, all else equal, would love to be persuading voters, right? It's a more effective way to win. That said, when you have political figures like Kamala Harris and especially Donald Trump, who are so familiar to the electorate, it can be hard to find persuadable voters at this point, you know, now almost a decade after Donald Trump kind of made his entrance into American national politics. So to get to your question, one of the things that we've been seeing in national survey data, which is somewhat unusual, is that lower frequency and lower engagement voters tend to be more pro-Trump. So I did a high quality survey in the spring, and I found that if you look just at voters who voted consistently in the federal elections in 2018, 2020, and 2022, Donald Trump and then candidate Joe Biden were running basically even, which is really striking, even among white voters. However, when you look at infrequent voters, say those who've cast only, say, one vote in the last three federal elections or no votes in the last three federal elections, Donald Trump was winning them 50 to about 20%. So what we see is an inversion of the usual pattern where the Democrats used to really benefit from high turnout. And it may well be, all else equal, that if nationwide you tell me the turnout is high in 2 weeks, I'm going to think that's a better night for the Republicans.
Yeah, I was going to just add to what Dan said. if you go back to the 2020 election, there's a small sliver of ballots in North Carolina that are provisional ballots. These are people who come to the polls and there's a problem. Maybe they've gone to the wrong precinct. There's a lot of issues. They're allowed to vote provisionally and the county board of elections can later count it. Trump won provisionals in 2020, which is pretty amazing because usually we think that Democratic voters are, you know, like Dan said, the higher turnout benefits Democrats, but the people who didn't understand the system in 2020, they were Trump voters. I just think that's fascinating.
Yeah. And when you look at the persistence of some of these voting trends, too, I'm curious, Dan, if you have any thoughts on why different voting frequency patterns might become entrenched in different geographies. And what I mean by that is, you know, Mecklenburg County, Wake County, kind of similar, all things considered, but this difference is pretty entrenched across the last several election cycles. What do you think about that?
So one thing I would note is that that politics is nationalized. And so we do see trends. Like I would note that Mecklenburg County's turnout in 2020 was actually substantially up over Mecklenburg County's turnout in 2016, partly because the national trend was of rising turnout generally. But I think that one of the profound challenges that we face is that in an age when people have so many choices for what TV they're watching, what information they're consuming, if you don't really like politics, you can opt out, right? You don't have to listen to NPR. You can make other choices.
You should.
Yeah. Well, and so one of the challenges that we're finding is that nowadays, as survey response rates decline and decline, the set of people who still take surveys are the small number of people who are really engaged in politics. And I think one of both the challenges for the political parties and for researchers like myself is trying to figure out where are the voters who aren't that habitually engaged, the low engagement voters. And what we saw in 2020, exactly as Steve had mentioned, is that in 2020, there was a large reservoir of low engagement pro-Trump or pro-Republican voters who helped produce an election that was much, much tighter than the polls suggested. And so I think one of the big questions going into November 5th is whether we're going to similarly see a lot of low engagement voters both showing up to vote and breaking for Donald Trump.
And Drew, I'm curious, as a party chair on the ground working this in this reality that Dan and Steve have been talking about every day, what do those national trends look like from where you sit and where you work?
Yeah, so Mecklenburg has been weird in that we haven't always followed all of those trends. If you look into 2022, when, you know, Democrats thought that there was going to be this big red wave, you know, during President Biden's first midterm, and it was really going to sweep Democrats out of a lot of elected positions. And in reality, you know, that didn't come to pass in the same way, except in North Carolina. And, you know, we lost the Senate race with Sherry Beasley, but we also, more importantly, lost two state Supreme Court seats, which is the reason that Democrats have been gerrymandered this year. All that to say, it was Democrats predominantly in Mecklenburg who didn't show up. When Democrats had shown up around the rest of the country, when they didn't show up in Mecklenburg, that cost us some very critical races. So Mecklenburg has been its own animal in a lot of ways. And I think at the end of the day, if you don't have either parties or candidates coming and knocking on doors, talking to voters about what it is that Democrats are doing for them, how Democratic policies are going to impact their life, and sometimes it's as simple as reminding them that there's an election, if that's not happening, then you're going to have fewer votes. And that's one of the things that the party is really working on, is trying to increase those numbers of votes, because people need that invitation.
Yeah. And one thing I want to circle back to that you mentioned earlier is, you know, after the primaries, except for national and statewide races, Mecklenburg is not really competitive. You know, we have an all Democratic county commission, mostly 9 out of 11 Democratic city council. Most of the state house seats, except for those few competitive ones. Do you think Mecklenburg Democrats have maybe done so well at the local level that it is a handicap at the statewide and national level? And would Mecklenburg Democrats maybe do better if they did a little worse in some sense, and there were more competitive races there.
100%. And I think that's part of why you saw Raleigh 4 years ago switch from partisan city council races to nonpartisan city council races, is because it changes those dynamics, to your point. I think when you win a lot of your local races, you know, people don't have that habitual voting history to go out in a general election. And that's really important.
And this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eli Portillo. Jeff, I want to turn back to you here and ask, you know, as you've gotten to know Mecklenburg County and North Carolina more broadly, but specifically Mecklenburg, I think what I'll call the Mecklenburg problem for Democrats has gotten more national recognition, including, you know, recently there was a large story in the New York Times on it. What are your conversations like with people around the country, around the Northeast, when you try to talk to them and say, hey, there's this county with kind of a funny name that we need to be focused on? And is it hard to divert people from thinking Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, the other more traditional swing states?
It's a great question. It used to be hard. It was hard in 2023. It was probably hard in June of 2024. It is not hard now. The story is out. You know, if you at the beginning of this election cycle, New Hampshire was treated as a swing state and North Carolina was treated as kind of maybe a swing state. Now North Carolina is one of the states. Everybody knows. We had a social gathering Friday night for the out-of-state canvassers. About 40 people came. A couple came from Colorado. They didn't come through my organization. They just came. I asked, why'd you come? And they said, well, we did our research, and kind of like everything says, go to Charlotte. The word is out. Drew did a brilliant interview with a wonderful guy named Robert Hubble that produced a huge response. Robert has a big following among the kind of liberal activist crowd. So it is changing. Winning also encourages national people to come. So we'll see.
And you're listening to Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE. Coming up after the break, Steve, I know you want to jump in, so we'll start with you. And we are going to be talking about turnout, Mecklenburg County, and how Democrats are trying to change a narrative. This is Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins, and joining me on this Politics Monday, we have Drew Cromer, chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, Jeff Blum, a Democratic activist, Steve Harrison, WFAE's political reporter, and Daniel Hopkins, a political science at the University of Pennsylvania. Steve, we're talking about voter turnout in Mecklenburg County and some things that Democrats are trying to do to fix the longstanding gap here.
Yeah, I think one thing that's important to talk about, too, we've compared Mecklenburg and Wake County. I think it's important to note some of the differences in the two. I mean, they are both the state's largest counties, the most important counties for Democrats. One thing about Wake County is, you know, politics is just so much more ingrained in the culture there because it's the head of state government. It's just something people talk about. It's something people think about. And if you come to Charlotte, it is not particularly top of mind here. Now, that's one part of it. And I think the other thing is that Mecklenburg County is a much more diverse place than Wake County. We have a larger percent of Hispanic voters. We have more international voters. This is just a bigger city. It is a more urban city, and so it presents challenges. We have just more newcomers. I'm not saying Wake County doesn't, but Charlotte and Mecklenburg County just has more recent arrivals into this country, and it takes longer for people to get plugged into the system. I'm sure Drew can talk about that, that, you know, it's one thing to get someone registered. That's a great accomplishment. But then getting them to vote is another thing altogether. So, you know, it's just apples. It's still critical for the Democrats to have success here, but it's hard.
That's right. And one in six Mecklenburg County residents born outside the U.S. We are not the seat of state government, like you said. And, you know, Hugh McCall, the maestro behind Bank of America, was quoted in the New York Times story that I referenced earlier about Mecklenburg County. And he said, look, the business of Charlotte is business. The business of Raleigh is politics. So historically, that's been the gap here. Drew, one thing that you've really hammered on in your message to people here and to Democrats is that the turnout in Mecklenburg County could impact national races this year. I think I've read interviews with you where you've said, you know, Mecklenburg County could impact, paraphrasing here, but the direction of the world. You really believe that?
Absolutely. So North Carolina was the closest state that Donald Trump won in the last election. And, you know, he only won the state by 75,000 votes. And at the end of the day, if Mecklenburg County were to show up at the same level as Wake County, we would substantially close that gap. We could produce 60, 65,000 votes. If North Carolina goes blue for Kamala Harris, there's a 97% chance that she becomes president. And her path to victory exclusively goes through Mecklenburg County, because she can't win North Carolina without Mecklenburg showing up this year. But if Mecklenburg shows up, and when Mecklenburg shows up, she will be elected the next president of the United States. And that will change the course of history, not just in our country, but nationally or internationally. Think about the war in Ukraine. Think about all of the conflicts around the world. Having someone like Kamala Harris be president will impact the world. And Mecklenburg County has an opportunity this year. When voters go to the voting booth, they can change the course of history, because this is the county that can decide it. I think a lot of people wonder, what would it be like to live in one of those well-known counties that they talk about on election night, the Fulton counties, the Maricopa counties? Well, I have news for people in Mecklenburg. You live in one of those counties now. And Mecklenburg has more registered voters than Fulton County. Fulton County, Georgia, the place that decided the election in Georgia last time. If Mecklenburg shows up this year, we will become North Carolina's Fulton County.
Jeff, I saw you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I completely agree with you. It can change the course of the world. But remember also, right here in North Carolina, the state is on point for things like reproductive rights, democracy rights. And if Josh Stein, who's going to get elected governor, is going to be able to govern, you got to break the Republican supermajority that is gerrymandered. And that also can happen here in Mecklenburg County. Nicole Sidman, Woodson Bradley, Beth Helfrich can win their state legislative races. That changes what happens in North Carolina, which affects, at the very least, the entire Southeast U.S., and it affects the turnout. I mean, as of Saturday, Mecklenburg was only 1 point behind Wake in its turnout. It's only 3 days, as Steve says, but that is a big closing of the gap. So y'all can really make a big impact. We are very happy from New York and Massachusetts and Alaska and Mississippi and all the places we're coming from to help, but it's on you. And I really hope that the listeners are not only getting out to vote, but are getting out to volunteer and get your friends to vote.
And of course, the Republican Party is not taking all this and lying down and not doing anything. They're not going to win Mecklenburg County, but this is an area that still produces, you know, I think last time, what, 190 some thousand votes for Donald Trump, even though, you know, that is far lower than the number of votes for Joe Biden last time. It's still crucial to turn out voters here to help their margin. Steve, what do we know about what Mecklenburg County Republicans and the state Republican Party is doing to turn out their base in Mecklenburg County?
Well, I mean, across North Carolina, the GOP has far fewer people on the ground than the Democrats do. I mean, the Democrats just have more money nationally. And so they have more people with the Harris campaign. Drew's party has more money than the county Republican Party. But they, like I said earlier, I mean, one of the things they're doing is they've really encouraged their people to come out and vote early because they want them to, they want their frequent voters to be done quickly so they can cross them off the list and then they can move on to those low propensity voters and get them to the polls. I mean, it is fascinating because Mecklenburg County has the second, just in terms of raw numbers, the second most number of registered Republicans in the state. I think I looked at the early voting so far. They are kind of trailing Mecklenburg Democrats as a percent who have voted. You know, we'll see, these things kind of tend to go back and forth. But yeah, it's just often overlooked. There are, I think, 160,000 registered Republicans in this county. It's a tremendous amount, and it's very important for them to try and kind of keep the margin down in Mecklenburg County.
And Dan.
Yeah, I think picking up on exactly what Steve just said, there's kind of an illusion that because Republicans tend to win in more rural areas and Democrats tend to win in more urban areas, that Republicans don't get a lot of votes from urban areas. When in fact, population density means that even a county like Mecklenburg is going to be one of the single largest providers of Republican votes statewide. I know that here in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia County is thought of as a Democratic bastion, and it is, but it also is about sixth in if you rank the counties in terms of the raw number of Republican votes. And so I think we sometimes look at maps and see that, you know, Mecklenburg goes blue, whereas a set of surrounding counties and more rural counties are often going red. But that, I think, may distract us from the fact that these elections really are won and lost in the bigger and more suburban areas where there are just many, many more people. It's kind of an illusion of looking at these maps. The one other thing I'd say, you know, one of the themes of this great conversation has been the difference between Wake and Mecklenburg. And I think I would also keep in mind that Wake is part of the Research Triangle, has a meaningfully higher fraction of people and voters with a college degree. And one of the key things that we have seen in recent years is that stratification on the kind of increasing distinction between particularly white voters with college education and white voters without a college education. And we in the research community, we don't really know exactly what's driving this. Is this that college educated voters are somewhat safer in a changing economy? Is this that they are more likely to be susceptible to liberal social influences or less religious? There are a whole bunch of explanations, but one of the key dividing lines that we have seen increasing magnitude in recent years has been that college-educated white voters are tending more Democratic, and non-college white voters are tending more Republican.
And Drew, talking about the kind of illusion that Dan was mentioning right now, that, you know, as a Democratic bastion, Mecklenburg County is not important to Republicans. Well, the truth is it is very important. They get a lot of votes from here. One of the focuses of the state party's chair, Clayton Anderson, has been to has been to really turn out Democrats in rural counties and focus a lot of resources on those areas, like Robeson County, where the Democratic Party has slipped in recent years. Smaller number of absolute votes, but a big influence in statewide margins. Is there any tension inherent there? And is there any tension between the state party's goal and focus and the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party's goal and focus?
Well, we both want to win elections and elect Democrats. And at the end of the day, you know, what we were just talking about with the Republicans, you know, not wanting to lose by as much in Mecklenburg, right? That Mecklenburg's still a big source of votes for them. Rural North Carolina is still a potentially large source of votes for Democrats. You know, historically, we've really abdicated rural North Carolina. And when we're not showing up and we're not visible, then people don't hear from Democrats. And so it's a lot easier to think that the Democratic candidates and party are, you know, the things that they hear about on Fox News, because you're not actually having a chance to interact with those people. And one of the things that Anderson's been working on, trying to get the Democratic Party to show up in more places, is just so that people can hear from us and can realize that we're their neighbors and we're the people that go to church with them. And, you know, we're not, you know, baby eaters and other things that Republican, you know, conspiracy theories like to think about Democrats in some of these dark red rural areas. But you know, we want to run up the scoreboard in rural North Carolina, because an extra vote in Anson County is the same as an extra vote in Mecklenburg County. Mecklenburg County just happens to be one of the places where we can do that most efficiently. Because of the density, because of the low turnout rates that we're experiencing here in Mecklenburg, the Democratic Party needs to turn out its base here in Mecklenburg. You know, Dan was talking earlier about persuasion and, you know, taking a vote from one column and putting it in your team's column. At the end of the day, persuasion is actually really, really hard to do. A lot of people are entrenched in what they're doing now. And mobilization, mobilizing the Democrats, is the focus of the party right now. We have tens and tens of thousands of people here in Mecklenburg. I think it was 140,000 or something that did not vote in the last presidential that are strong Democrats. And, you know, Trump won the state by 75,000 votes. And in 2020, Sherry Beasley lost the Chief Justice, the state Supreme Court Chief Justice race by 401 votes out of 5 million. 401 votes, and that's only 2 votes per precinct in Mecklenburg. And you'd be shocked to know that there were 15,000 registered Democrats who showed up in 2020, went to the voting booth, voted for Joe Biden, and didn't make it to the bottom of the ballot and vote for Sherry Beasley. 15,000, and she lost by 401. So we've got a lot of low-hanging fruit in Mecklenburg, and that's what the party is trying to get out and talk to people. You know, the demographics are different between us and Wake in some ways, but the real difference is Mecklenburg County hadn't historically had a strong party apparatus, hadn't had a turnout machine. Wake County has had thousands of volunteers, many staff, you know, for the last 10, 15 years. And so we need to build that up here, go talk to folks, encourage everyone to go vote this year, because this is the county that can decide the election.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eli Portillo. So in the first segment, we heard from Karen Brinson Bell, the state elections director, about the devastation in Western North Carolina and how they are making sure people in places like Buncombe County and the surrounding area can still vote. Given that we don't really know how that disruption is going to scramble voting patterns out west that people were maybe counting on, how much more important is it for Mecklenburg County to show up for the Democratic Party? I mean, it seems like it's really crucial now if you might have people in Asheville, for example, who the party was counting on, who don't or are not able to vote right now.
I will say, Eli, one thing that I've been found that interesting in looking at the early vote results from the mountains is that I don't think the impact so far through early voting has been as severe as we thought. Buncombe County, home to Asheville, a Democratic stronghold, has had about 12.4% of their voters already cast ballots. That's even a little higher than Mecklenburg. Now, that may peter out as we get closer to the election, you know, but so far, we haven't seen this massive drop-off in participation in the mountains. In Buncombe County, if you're seeing good turnout, that's good for Democrats. Of course, most of the counties, these are Trump counties, that the Republicans need people to come out. But so far, we have not seen just the chaos and lack of participation that some people thought might occur.
And as you look at the races, Drew, obviously the presidential is the big one. Then we also have governor, the Council of State, on down to legislative elections. A lot of those smaller elections, as you alluded to with Sherry Beasley, are decided by even tighter margins than we saw. Is there any frustration ever on your end of saying, you know, 501 votes, and then you had, like you said, 15,000 people who didn't even mark it? What do you think about that? And we have 1 minute.
It's incredibly frustrating, right? I mean, when we can change the direction of our state by these small margins, and these are people, particularly when we talk about ballot drop-off, people who don't vote the whole ballot, it's incredibly frustrating. You know, we know that we've already got those people in the voting booth. This year, when people go to the polls here in Mecklenburg County, as long as your precinct is not restricted, there'll be a nice volunteer in a MecDems t-shirt standing outside, handing you a blue ballot, telling you everyone you need to vote for this year.
Well, early voting is underway. The election is just over 2 weeks away, and we will keep talking about it here on WFAE and Charlotte Talks. Thank you to Drew Cromer, Jeff Blum, Steve Harrison, and Dan Hopkins. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins. Appreciate you spending this time with us, and see you out at the polls.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.